the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, and another hour is just ahead. It's here. How about that? Another hour of money information looms. Another useful, I would say, informative session with the Brain Trust coming right up. We're doing our best to keep you informed about your money and about your money strategies. It is Bucket Strategy Investing, of course. I'm Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, here again with me from Lucia Capital Group. We're ready to take your phone calls and your emails, etc., etc. Standing by to answer your money questions. Got a couple of lines open right now, but only one or two. So get to your phone, wherever your phone is, give us a call, 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. That spells out PLANNER. To send us your questions in email form, you go to our website, wealthed.com. Go to the link that says Find Your Answer. Of course, we're here to help you out with whatever money questions that you might have. That's the Brain Trust standing by. Professor Rick Plum back with me as always, courtesy of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. We're all about strategy on this program, and I would suggest, highly suggest, that you need a bucket strategy, one that's personalized to you, one that aims to meet all of your specific goals and needs. You call the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, you get your bucket strategy started. Their number off the air, 800-644-1150. Everyone's situation is different. No two plans are ever alike, and I would say certainly no two people are alike. You find out if you're on the right path to retirement. Their number at Lucia Capital Group, again, off the air, 800-644-1150. On the air, 877-PLANNER, and we got some folks on hold. We're going to take the calls right now. Got more stuff to talk about on paying off mortgages, Roths, etc., and that's all coming up, assuming that there's time. We're going to start with Melissa in Santa Rosa, California. Hey, Melissa, thanks for hanging on. How can we help you today?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. California taxation being what it is, it's this time of year is tough.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, my husband is a dual citizen. He's a Dutch citizen and a U.S. citizen, and his work is, most of his work is not in the United States.
Okay.
It's in Korea and Amsterdam. And he's currently a corporation in California. It's the kind of corporation that passes through.
S-Corp.
Yeah, and I'm sort of wondering if it doesn't make sense to set some kind of offshore trust up to funnel the income through or to keep the money offshore and draw a salary and pay taxes here on a salary but retain the excess offshore.
You're going to need a good accountant and a good legal international attorney on this one.
Okay.
He's a U.S. citizen. So you would have to form a C corporation, the C corporation domiciled outside of California, and the money, he couldn't pay himself a dividend, he couldn't pay himself, I mean, anything that he pays in dividend or pays in salary would be taxable in his state of residence. California wants its pound of salt. I know that the government, the federal government, is really trying to crack down on this type of issue, well, obviously the state too. The federal's a little bit more after this than others. But this is something you're going to really need to discuss. He is a U.S. citizen. He is responsible for paying taxes on his earnings worldwide. And so the only way to get around that would be to have a corporation that doesn't pay him any income. And you can do that, but you'd have to have to avoid the California tax, you'd have to have the corporation domiciled somewhere else besides California. And the fact that it doesn't do work in California, you have a better chance of that. If it actually did work in California, a lot of people talk about doing Nevada corporations and things of that nature, where they have a corporation domiciled in Nevada, but all the work is done in California, and the owner and the only employee of the company lives in California. California's still going to get their pound of salt in that area. But if it's doing work outside of this, where athletes a lot of times will, make their domicile, their residence in a state that doesn't have an income tax. So, but they still have to pay taxes for the money they earn in a specific state when they play a game in a specific state, but the rest of the money wouldn't be taxable. So you're going to have to talk to somebody that really understands international finance.
Okay. Are you able to make a referral for someone like that, or should I just start locally in San Francisco? Or
I do not have referrals to that type of source.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, Melissa, thanks for the call. I mean, it's...
The fact that he does a lot of international work outside of
it
California.
Helps.
Yeah, and the fact that he's
Well, he's it'll a dual citizen. So.
It'll have to be a C corporation, though. It'll have to be, and the C corporations don't pass through the income. That's because that's a problem.
Well, then he'd be taxed on it.
Then he'd be taxed on it. But C corporations have their own tax issues.
Mm-hmm.
And if he leaves a lot of money in the corporation, there's taxes at the corporate level. And so you have to weigh out the fact that, okay, I'm paying taxes here versus paying taxes here. And then at some point in the future, I'm going to take the money out of the corporation and I'm going to pay taxes here anyway. So am I getting any real benefit for this?
No, and the X factor is where, as you said, most of the work, is it being done in Holland or is it being done in the U.S.? If it's being done in the U.S., then they're gonna have U.S. taxes. And if it's being done in, say, California, the California, as you said, is gonna go after the taxes for that. So yeah, it's very specific situation. Certainly an international expert on international taxes.
An international accountant.
Yes, because you don't want to miss out on anything that you're entitled to.
Right.
That's the other side of it. So
this isn't a loophole. You're just using the rules that they wrote
To your advantage.
The
Absolutely.
The way that makes it most efficient for you.
And if you can avoid taxes legally, absolutely do it. Okay, 877 Planner. Abraham's been hanging on a while. Let's go to him in Dallas, Texas. Hello, Abraham.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I always enjoyed your show.
Thank you.
This is a Social Security question.
Okay.
This year, I'm going to be 67. My wife will be 65. We both have been working more than 40 years. And basically, what we will receive from Social Security whenever we file will be almost exactly the same amount because we always have made the same money.
Okay.
And the question is, under the new rules, would I still be able to file and suspend, and when would the deadline be? And then with my wife, next year, would she be 66, would she be able to file and suspend?
Well, she would not want
to.
Yes.
I mean restricted application. I'm sorry.
Yes, you can do. So you're assuming that both of you will live a long time. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Hope so.
Assuming both of you will live a long time and you both want to wait to turn your own benefit on until age 70, the question is, are there still, even after they change the rules, any games that you can potentially play? And yes, you do fall into the grandfathering areas where you, Abraham, can file and suspend your benefit and still allow her at some future date to take a benefit from your work record. The deadline for that is April 29th of this year. Don't wait. Do it now. So go ahead and file and suspend now. The key is your full retirement age. You have to be full retirement age to be able to file and suspend, and you have to do the file and suspend before April 29th. You've already met the first part, your full retirement age.
Got to get the second part done.
Now you got to get the second part done. You got to file and suspend before the 29th of April. Once that's done, then the next thing we have to wait for is your wife to become full retirement
age. When will she be 66? This year, next year.
Next year.
Next year, okay.
But the key
on July, she will be 66 next year.
July 2017.
Correct.
So the key for her is that she was at least 62 before the end of last year. She was.
She was 64.
So she is grandfathered into the restricted application. She can still do it. There's nothing she needs to do that she hasn't already done. What she needed to do was turn 62 before the end of last year. Done. She's already done that. So now she waits until she's full retirement age. When she's full retirement age, assuming you have filed and suspended correctly on time, she can then apply for a restricted application, start receiving half of your 66 benefit until she turns 70, and then she goes in and turns her 70 benefit on. So you've got an April 29th deadline. She just has to wait until she's 66.
Well, thank you so much. You're always so helpful, and I always enjoy your show. You know, I always liked the questions from people and then
the
answers that you give. So it's such an honor to to talk to you.
Well, thank you, Abraham. We appreciate it, and I'll say it's an honor talking to you, too, and I do mean that. Thank you for asking the questions. Once again, Professor Plum, the new rules, they can be complicated for people to whom it matters. And in this case, for Abraham and his wife,
they fit right in.
They fit right in. Abraham is already over age 66, currently over his full retirement age. He's 67 now.
He wanted to wait until 70 anyway.
Right. So his idea is to file and suspend, which he needs to do. That's where the deadline comes in.
That's the only deadline they have right now.
Before April 29th of this year, He'll do that. Assuming he does that, he's taken care of. Now they have to wait till his wife turns full retirement age.
But she doesn't have to do anything right now.
No.
There's nothing she needs to file. Or
she can't do anything.
The only thing she needed to do, as I mentioned earlier, was turn 62 before the end of 2015. She's done that. Now she waits until she's full retirement age. And so this one actually worked out well. Now, she is not old enough to do the file and suspend, but they didn't want to do that anyway. Hmm. She wasn't 66 before April of this year, so she can't do file and suspend, but she can still do the restricted application.
Well, she could file and suspend once she hits full retirement age, but she's not going to get any benefit out of the same benefit that Abraham's going to get.
Yeah, and if Abraham, if they've been a little bit younger, they would have been a little bit of an issue because the file and suspend goes away for anybody who cannot file and suspend by the end of April 29th.
So all those years, Abraham, you and your wife had the foresight to be born when you were.
In the correct years.
It was an excellent choice that you made. Okay, thanks for the call. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Lines open, taking your calls when we come back. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, talking to you about your money. And we do it on this program. We do it off of this program, too. I want to remind you that if you're watching or listening in Scottsdale, Phoenix, I'll extend it all the way to Yuma. I'm continuing to do that, 200-something miles. Come on over to the
JW Marriott Desert Ridge.
You know where it is. Phoenix, Arizona. Saturday, March 12th. That's tomorrow. Tomorrow already. Sign up at wealthed.com. Wealthed.com. It's free. Bring your money questions. Meet the Brain Trust. Meet Professor Plum, Terry Keyes, and the local advisors. And as I said, get your questions answered. In Phoenix tomorrow. Almost last time I'm going to remind you. A week from tomorrow. Portland, Oregon. Saturday, March 19th. And then Houston, Texas. That's on the radar screen. April 9th. These are all Saturdays. These are all 9 o'clock local time starts. You can join the Brain Trust by going to wealthed.com. Just say you're coming. Here is our name. Here are how many people are going to be showing up. We'll have a chair for you and bring your money questions. That's all there is to it. It's an awful lot of fun and a learning experience, too. Wealthed.com. Okay, 877-PLANNER. We got a couple of lines open, 877-752-6637. I want to go back to something that we talked about that had to do with paying off the mortgage. And I had an email on this. Let's see if I can find that email. You have the emails there?
I do.
In Columbus, Ohio. You see this? Oh, here we go.
Mr. Robert.
That's right. And we were talking last hour, Professor Plum, about paying off the mortgage. And
when should you? When shouldn't you? How should you? How shouldn't you?
Exactly. Now he's asking, Robert is asking a question about something that we've talked about in the past, although we haven't said anything lately. He's talking about a caller we had. Robert says, on the last caller, about her mortgage making two payments a month. We had a caller regarding doing the bi-monthly mortgage. Every 2 weeks, you make a payment. Then you wind up with 13 payments instead of 12, and you pay it off sooner. Is this a good idea? And he's saying, by the way, there's a $300 fee to start this program. So in other words, Professor Plum, the bank has a program where you can make bi-monthly payments instead of single monthly payments.
Bi-weekly.
Well, that's, I forget.
Okay, it's every 2 weeks.
Two payments a month.
Well, no, it's every 2 weeks. And that's
right,
key.
Every 2 weeks.
It's not just
not
just two payments a month.
It's every 2 weeks.
It's every 2 weeks. You take your monthly payment,
which makes it a biweekly. Yes.
Divide it by two, and you make that payment every 2 weeks. And what that does is it ends up making one extra payment a year, because there's 52 weeks. So if you're making a payment every 2 weeks, you're making 26 payments equal to half of your regular payment. That means that you're making 13 payments. There's absolutely no reason to pay a company $300 up front, and they usually charge you $5, $6, $7 per payment
processing.
As a service or processing charge to do a bi-weekly mortgage. You want to do a bi-weekly mortgage? Here's what you do. Send me the $300 for doing this information. I'm kidding. Don't send it to me. Take your monthly payment. Okay? You got that in your head? Maybe you need a calculator. Multiply that by 13. And then divide that number by 12. That's now your new monthly payment. that you're going to get the exact same result out of it as you would by making a biweekly mortgage. You're making 13 payments a year. You're just breaking it into 12 payments. You're making an extra payment a year. So you can do the very same thing. And then if you really want to do this and have the payment, have the mortgage paid off a little early, take that $300 instead of paying it to the bank, make an extra principal payment with it. That'll help you more than paying the bank to do this for you.
I have never understood how they talk people into doing something. A bank talk people into doing something that they can do themselves for absolutely no cost.
The issue for a lot of people is they don't. Okay, we've told them that. You know, okay, instead of a $1,200 a month payment, you make a $1,300 a month payment. That's the math on that particular one. But they don't. Now, the real issue is, should you? In that respect, earlier in the show, we were talking about a $250,000 4% mortgage. If you did it, you know, and paid just the minimum payment, it's obviously 360 payments, 30 years. But if you added and did a biweekly mortgage on it, instead of being 30 years, it does reduce the time period because you're making one extra payment a year. So instead of being 30 years, it's 25 years, 11 months. You cut out 3 years and 1 month or whatever it is. Yeah. Big deal. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, can you earn over the next 25, 26 years with that extra payment that you're putting into the mortgage, can you earn an amount equal to or greater than what it's costing you for the mortgage? 25 years? Yeah. Based on the S&P 500, we have never had a 25-year period of time where the S&P 500 didn't earn just shy of 8%. And that's a buy and hold. Dollar cost averaging will enhance that. So don't do the biweekly mortgage. If you want to pay it off soon, fine. Add more money to the payment every month. But don't waste your money.
Yeah.
Money that could have gone to your mortgage. Money that could have helped you pay it off even sooner. Don't let them take the money from you. Use it to your advantage.
Set it up yourself.
Put it in a Roth IRA.
Or put it in a Roth IRA. This was our strategy last hour. We talked about this. Instead of putting, we took an example, $200 extra a month that you have, you can put it toward the principal of your mortgage and pay it down faster. You'll have it paid off in almost 23 years as opposed to 30 years. Or you can take that $200 a month and you can put it into a Roth IRA and allow that to grow using compounding and all that over the course of 22 point whatever years, almost 23 years. And at the end of that 22 years, when the other mortgage would have been paid off, you could just take the money out of the Roth and pay that off.
Now, the other issue is most people don't live in their house for 30 years. Maybe they live in it for 10 years. By making that extra payment for 10 years, it reduced your mortgage by about $12,000, $13,000. Is that going to help you really be that much different?
Right, and if you put the money into a Roth,
you'd have that money working for you.
You have that money working for you, and you would have, I don't know what it is, but if you put the extra $200 in. And the other thing that I like about putting it into the Roth, and I said this before, is that I like having access to it. If I give it to the bank in the form of my mortgage as an extra mortgage payment of $200 a month, whatever it is, if I need that money back that I put in dutifully over 6, 7, 8 years, 10 years, 20 years, if I need that money back, I got to borrow it.
And that is one of the reasons to actually pay it against the mortgage. The accessibility of the Roth means that...
Well, I just said I like that.
Right, but that's also for some people, not for you, because you're okay. A disciplined individual. Well. For some people, they will end up using that money for something, and they won't end up paying off their mortgage. They won't end up having the extra money because they, you know, $200 a month, they don't notice that. But once that account gets up to $10,000, $15,000,
$20,000... In the Roth?
They're in the Roth, they're like... New car.
Not going to put that toward the mortgage.
They end up not, use the money for something else. So the flexibility, with great power comes great responsibility. With the ability to have this extra money comes the responsibility of maintaining it. Unfortunately, the flexibility of the Roth is also, in many respects, its downfall. The ability to get to our contributions at any time for any reason also means that we don't have that wall between us and the money, and a lot of times people will take the money out and they don't use it for what it was designed for. So you do need to have a little bit of a discipline. If you only have the discipline to add an extra $100, $200 a month to your mortgage, and you know that you can't ever get that back, but you would if you put it in the Roth, well, then the mortgage is not the worst thing.
No, although you're going to come out money behind.
But you're going to come out money behind anyway because you don't have the discipline to save it in the first place.
Well, I don't know about that. You could have a really cool car along with,
Great memories.
Great memories.
What kind of cool car can you buy for $100 a month?
You can't put a price on that. I don't know. Whatever you spent your 10, 15, 20 grand on. Okay, we're going to come back. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about why you should or should not pay off your mortgage. Don't go away. Okay, we'll play songs like this on a Friday. It's a Friday. We're loose and whatever here. It's nice. 877-PLANNER is our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. I got some more emails to get to, but the last thing on this paying off the mortgage that we didn't get to last hour, and I want to cover this here. We started to a little bit ago. How do you know when to pay off your mortgage, and how do you know when not to pay off your mortgage? Now, for some people, Professor Plum, they say, well, it's a no-brainer. Always pay it off. Put everything that you have toward the mortgage because it's your biggest debt.
And for a lot of people, retiring without that mortgage makes their cash flow a lot easier.
Okay, so let's say this, though. There are reasons to do it, but then there may be reasons not to do it.
Well, we've talked about some reasons not to do it, where you can invest over the time horizon remaining on the mortgage. As fast as you could pay it off is still a 20-year time horizon.
Yeah.
Okay,
now,
that means I think you should invest.
Let me give you a couple more reasons. See if you agree with these. I would not pay off the mortgage if I've got a decent amount of consumer debt.
Consumer debt trumps it.
Yeah, if you have credit cards, you have whatever other consumer debt that you need to pay down, I would not work toward paying off, especially interest rates being where they are now. You got a 3.5, 4, whatever percent mortgage, I'm not sure I'd pay that off. How about this? If you're not maxing out your Roth or your other retirement plans, should you max your Roth and other retirement plans before you pay off your mortgage?
It depends on whether I have the availability to pay off the mortgage and how soon I'm going to retire. There are times where maybe I'm 3-4 years out from retirement, and with the money I have at hand plus the money I'm going to put into my Roth and other things, I could be paid off of my mortgage. And so I would probably do that, and then, like our caller said, take all the payment and start building up existing accounts.
Well, now you're going down.
Now I'm going back to time horizon.
Yes, you are, and you're going down into some of my reasons why I was thinking it would make sense to pay it off. Okay, now.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay, because I would expect you to say that. That's one of the reasons. I would not pay off the mortgage if the assets to pay it off are in retirement plans.
Like, well, that becomes very expensive.
Traditional IRAs, 401ks, and all
that
stuff.
We've had that question quite a bit where it's like, okay, my mortgage remaining balance is $180,000, and I've got $200,000 in my IRA. Should I withdraw the money and pay it off? And I'm over 59 and a half. Definitely if you're under 59 and a half, it's scary. But the end of the matter is, where are you going to get the money to pay the taxes? I mean, you just jumped brackets. I mean, that doesn't make a lot of sense either.
I would not pay it off in that situation. I might not pay it off if I may need the funds to tap into the funds in order to pay it down. The other reason that I may not is I might move. If I'm only going to be in the house 6-7 years, I'm not sure that I would work to pay down a mortgage that I'm going to be moving away from in 6-7 years.
Yeah, I mean, building up a cash account can help you actually move a little bit better. You put more money down to hold it. You can do things. But, you know, that one can go a lot of different ways. It's nice to be able to have cash to maybe buy the new house and then sell your house and use that money later.
Yeah.
Or you're going to borrow the money out on it. You know, do what I did. Take a home equity line on the existing house to put down on the new house and then sell the old house. But that's how I got the money out of the old house to buy the new house.
That's the way to do it. Of course, you got to be diligent.
Paying a little bit of interest, but not very much.
Well, it depends on how long it takes you to sell. You know.
Oh, well, I was worried that I was going to end up carrying two mortgages for a little while. And then I ended up selling my house way too fast, and then I had to find a house to rent for 2 months because the new house wasn't ready yet.
This is on your current house.
This is on the current house.
Yeah.
It was like, wow. It's not easy finding a place to rent for 2 months.
Somebody should have gone back and said, but you know, it's the top of the market.
I didn't have a choice. We inherited another child to raise.
And
Got really small. We bought a bigger house.
You know what? Cardboard box in the back patio. That works just as well.
I'm not even allowed to do that for the animals.
Okay, so when does it make sense to pay off the mortgage? Okay, you've already mentioned a couple of these, Professor Plum. When you can eliminate it in a short period of time. When the balance is low, when you have, I would say, adequate liquidity for emergencies.
I was talking to a lady the other day, and she's looking to get ready to retire. And she's got $190,000 left on her mortgage, but she's got She's a very, very conservative, I don't even want to use the word investor. She's a very conservative saver. Volatility scares the living heck out of her. So the majority of her money is sitting in cash and other accounts. And she has more than enough money in cash to pay off the mortgage. So my question to her was, why haven't you paid off the mortgage? And she wasn't really sure how to answer it. She goes, well, people tell me not to pay it off. They tell me that I need that tax deduction. It's like, the tax deduction is doing you no favor.
No.
You've got $200,000 sitting in a bank account earning 0.05%, and you're paying 4% in interest. Even after the tax deduction, you're paying 2.5%, 2.75%. It's costing you 5, 6, 7 times as much as what you're earning. Pay it off.
Cash flow.
Cash flow is a big issue.
If cash flow is what's, you know, you need an extra $1,200 a month or whatever it is, and you've got all this money sitting perhaps in an account somewhere that you can get, you can have access to without paying taxes or too much in taxes.
But cash flow goes both ways. It can be a reason to extend a mortgage. You're 65 years old. You still have 10 years left on your mortgage, and you've got a $2,500 a month payment. And you're like, okay, I can have this done in 6 years, 7 years. But there's 7 of your best, healthiest years in retirement. At that case, it may be better to refinance it to a new 30, 40-year mortgage. Does it matter if you're paid off at 75 or 95? If during the 65 to 75, you've got an extra $2,500 a month to live off of? Cash flow is very important both ways.
Now, an open-ended question to you, Professor Plum, since we're on the topic. Is carrying a mortgage into retirement necessarily a bad thing?
Not necessarily a bad thing. It depends on why you're doing it and whether you can actually afford it. For a lot of people, carrying a mortgage into retirement is a horrible thing because they can't afford to do it. And so they end up working longer and longer, and they end up not ever having an actual retirement because they work till they're 75, 80, and then they retire. But then they're not healthy enough to do the things they wanted to do in retirement. They should never have bought that house if that was the issue. So, but for some people, I was speaking with a gentleman this morning who, when he retires in 2 years, is going to have roughly $140,000 in pensions. He can very easily make a $2,000 a month mortgage payment, and he actually just refinanced it. He was paying $3,000 a month, and he refinanced it to a new 30-year mortgage and dropped it to $1,800 a month, because he goes, "What do I care if it's paid off when I'm 85?" I want the money when I'm 65. Actually, I was going to retire at 59, but I want it when I'm young enough and healthy enough to do all the things I want to do. My cash flow is a better idea. So paying it off, don't pay it off. Where is the money going to come from to make the mortgage payment? And this is where I have a problem with people trying to convince senior citizens that have a free and clear house to borrow against it to invest. Where are they going to get the money to make the payment? Now, if they have a ton of pension income and they can easily make the payment from some other source besides their new investment portfolio, and they're a more aggressive type investor, sure, that can make some sense because they can probably invest the money at a greater rate of return than it's costing them. But if you're going to try to pull money out of the house to invest it and create the payment to make the payment and then still have some extra money in growth,
sure,
it's not going to happen. You are not going to earn enough money there to make it work. So unfortunately, there are reasons to have a mortgage. There are reasons to not have one.
We get to this email because Ned in Ryerson, California, sent this earlier.
Funny.
I don't want to leave Ned waiting. Speaking of cash flow here, in regards to higher loans, I'm 25. I'm underwater in a 17% car loan. Wow. I've taken out some of my Roth contributions to pay some other debt off. Once it's paid down, which strategy would be best to save more money on this dreadful car loan?
70% is fairly dreadful.
I've been told that since the loan amount is above Kelly Blue Book, I would have to pay money just to refinance.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, nobody's going to do a car title loan that's any better than that if you're upside down on the values. If your car is worth, you know, $10,000 and you owe $14,000, they're not going to make you a $14,000 loan. It's, you know, what's so you default on the loan. They get a $10,000 car. They don't like that. They just went out $4,000. Yeah, you might have to. You know, you're either going to have to start making extra payments, and this is a case where I would not contribute to the Roth IRA, and I would pay down this car loan at 17, 18%, you are not earning 18% in your Roth IRA. You are killing yourself with this kind of a debt. Let's focus on getting rid of it, whether you pay extra money by saving it and then pulling a lump sum out, or whether you just focus on, you know, instead of making a $500 a month payment, make a $700 a month payment and get that thing down to a point where you can refinance it. Get it down to under the Kelley Blue Book so you can do a new refinancing loan on it. And then you can get it down to a more reasonable 6 or 7%.
Yeah.
Still not a great loan, but...
Or find a, you know, find a, maybe there's a relative somewhere or a coworker, you know, who's willing to, you know, lend.
People that have 17% car, you know, debt probably don't have those relatives, because otherwise they would have already tapped them.
Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe they hadn't thought of it. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't make the loan, but maybe you would.
No.
No? Okay.
I got weddings to pay for. I don't have extra money to loan out to cars.
That's true. I hadn't thought of that. Okay. Never mind. Thank you, Ned. More coming up. Brain Trust standing by to answer your questions. You call now because we got some lines open. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Some trivia, what's coming up on Monday, and more of your emails as well. All just ahead. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. Bucket Strategy Investing returns right after this. I knew it.
Yep.
I'm threatening one of these days just let the song play. Well, we got to change the time of day we play it though. I don't want people, you know, during
Friday,
this.
That Friday at the 45 or
okay,
51, whatever.
51, I guess it is. Yeah. I don't want people to get tired of it because I'm not going to get tired of it. I'm going to keep playing it. Anyway, that's us. 877 PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Now, a couple of things here. First of all, last chance for me to tell you about Phoenix tomorrow. Professor Plum is heading out of here in like 12 minutes or so.
Gonna so be gone. Clear the roads.
That's right. Clear the roads. Watch out. Stand back. But Phoenix workshop tomorrow. If you're in Scottsdale, Phoenix, anywhere in the surrounding areas, join them 9 o'clock in the morning. You go to wealthed.com to sign up, wealthed.com. Make plenty of room. There's plenty of room for as many people that we want to have show up. So call us. Just let us know you're going to be there, and we would love to see you there in Phoenix. So that's coming up tomorrow. Now, trivia. Actually, no. I tell you what. Coming up on Monday, we haven't talked about this for a long time. Social Security taxation. Once again, it seems that there are a lot of people that don't know that Social Security is taxed, or believe that Social Security stops being taxed once you hit age 66, 65, I've heard.
70.
70 and a half, I've heard. Or they believe that Social Security is taxed at an 85% rate. As in, if you get $100 of Social Security, you only get to keep $15 of it.
Sounds about right.
Well, it's not true, but we'll clear some of that up on Monday. And by the way, there is strategy with regard to Social Security taxation. And it has to do with some of the things that we talked about this past week, as in required minimum distributions. All this plays a part, and you need to know about it. So we'll talk about it on this program on Monday. Now, trivia time. This is what everybody's really been waiting for. Here's another one from the IRS.
They've been busy lately. It's like they don't have anything else to do.
Well, they sent this to me via registered letter. Or maybe they sent it to me
in an email. Yeah.
That's what it was, yes. Yes. Dear kind sir, will you kindly please read the email? Yeah. Okay, so here's what they're telling us. 0.2% of the American taxpayers that reported adjusted gross income of at least $1 million during tax year 2013 legally did not pay any federal income tax.
Huh.
Now, that's a small percentage point, okay? That's
very small, but it's still... That's a lot of deductions, and those are below-the-line deductions. That's not a business loss.
So how do you erase $1 million of
It's not mortgage interest. You could maybe get rid of half of it by charitable donations. So you could get rid of half of it by $500,000 by a very large charitable donation, cash. But then you still have $500,000 left to go. You can only write off the mortgage on your primary residence up to... You know, call it $1,100,000. So the interest rate's not that high anymore. Medical expenses, yeah, more than, but your medical expenses would have to be more than $100,000 to be deductible. That's a tough one. I don't know how they're doing that.
I don't know either. And the fact that it comes from the IRS, number one. Number two, they say it was legal. Legally did not pay any federal right. income.
Yeah, like I said, though, it's not a business loss. It's not passive income. It's not real estate professional losses. It's nothing on the front page of the 1040. It's got to be on the back pages. And I don't know how you're writing off $1 million. But, hey, from the IRS. It must be true.
The IRS is watching, listening and to our program because, obviously, they keep sending us this stuff. So I'll tell you what. Tell us how they did that. I am curious myself.
Yeah, the 659 people in the United States that were able to do this.
0.2% of the American taxpayers. 659 out of 345,884 tax returns. That's a lot of people making at least $1 million, too, by the way.
That's a lot of people making $1 million and not paying taxes.
The first step to doing this is
make $1 million.
Get $1 million. There you go.
Thank you, Steve Martin.
877-PLANNER, wealthed.com for emails. Let's get to running out of time, so I'll do a shorter one here. Annette in Port Orchard, Washington. I'll be getting $2,500 in pensions per month soon at age 62 for my first job. I will continue to work a year or two. I don't need my pension now, so my question is, what do I do with it? My spouse and I make $150,000 per year. We itemize our deductions. I'm thinking that I should increase my traditional IRA, increase my deferred compensation from Washington State, or find another tax shelter. I was thinking I would probably need the tax advantage now that a Roth wouldn't give. Oh, I see. Do you agree?
Yes and no. It depends on how much you've already built up in your tax-deferred accounts. And the fact that you've got an extra $2,500 a month, $30,000 a year, you're going to have a hard time sheltering all of it. And so I think you'll probably have enough money to do the Roth IRA for you and your husband, as well as do some of these other tax-deferred investments. You can't do a Roth IRA. You have a deferred comp at your new employment. You're talking about putting money away into your new deferred comp at your new employment, which means you have a retirement plan at your current employment, and you're over the limits for doing a deductible traditional IRA. So the IRA is not going to help. You have to do something through your employment, whether it's the deferred comp or if you have a 401k, your husband has a 401k. If you're not already maxing those out, you could potentially max those out. But if you're already sitting on, you know, a huge chunk, you know, a large amount of IRA tax deferred accounts, then you may not want to do that. This is a case where we need to look at what you've already done so that we don't just make the problem worse. It's, you know, again, I was talking to somebody this morning who's got some very nice pensions, and he and his spouse are going to be in a higher tax bracket in retirement than they were while they were working. And so we need to look at that and see what your projected retirement income is going to look like to determine whether we need to continue deferring or maybe building up more Roth money, including Roth 457, Roth 401k, something of that nature, to get, you know, suck up that $2,500 a month into some type of savings vehicle. But if you don't want to do it through tax deferred means, I would definitely do the Roth IRA.
Sure.
But you could also do just personal investing. And because you're going to have money every month, this makes sense for ongoing growth investments for the dollar cost averaging aspect of it. But before you just say, don't do the Roth, let's take a look at the rest of your life.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good position to be in. You're all of a sudden getting an extra $2,500, and this is at age 62.
So she's going to have that. She's going to have, if she's working for the state of Washington, most likely she'll work long enough to get a pension from there. Mm-hmm. She'll be able to maybe, I don't know if she pays into Social Security or not, she maybe get some Social Security. Her husband will have Social Security. He may have a pension as well. They may have more income in retirement than they do while they're working.
Boy, I tell you what, if somebody should have told me to do that years ago when I was young, you know, working this job to give you the pension, you know, maybe a state or government job, something like that, you know?
Yeah, but when we first started into the workforce, the government jobs paid less money. They had nice benefits. You could earn more in the private sector. That's not necessarily the case anymore.
No, it really isn't the case anymore, which is true. But you know what? I went into something I loved, and so did you. So, hey, it all works out in the end. We're out of time for this segment and this program, this hour. If you need the brain trust off the air, talk to Professor Plum, any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group about your retirement situation, about your bucket strategy, 800-644-1150. The off-air number, 800-644-1150. For Professor Rick Plum, I am Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.